So hello and welcome to the first of our History Rage specials live from the Gloucester History Festival. And History Rage, the podcast where our historians make a gallant last stand against public misconception, no matter the cost. I am your regular host, Paul Bavel, and seeking a UN intervention for this first episode, I am joined by the director of the Soldiers of Gloucestershire Museum, Matthew Holden. Matthew, welcome to History Rage.
Thank you very much, Paul.
I'm glad you think so. Carry on massaging my ego. Feeling angry? Excellent. Good. I've never met a museum director that doesn't have a permanent level of seething anger. You're like history teachers in that regard. Though history teachers can deal with more cooperative people. So before we dive into what is annoying the hell out of you then, just first of all, we're here in the Korean War Room of the Museum of Gloucester Soldiers. The Soldiers of Gloucestershire Museum, yes. So it's a very specific museum there, but can you tell us a bit about the museum and the work that you do here, not just in preserving history, but getting those messages out to wider public?
So predominantly the museum represents the Gloucestershire Regiment and the Royal Gloucestershire Hussars. So Royal Gloucestershire Hussars, they were kind of set up as a home guard defence against Napoleon, and they've carried on in that vein since. But the Gloucesters are your kind of hardcore frontline infantry regiment. 300 years of history, they've got more battle honours than any other regiment who's ever served in the British Army. So huge honour there. But we're looking to expand our scope because the Gloucesters amalgamated into another regiment 30 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So you really need to be more representative of all the armed forces in Gloucestershire. So Gloucestershire has more veterans than any other county for some reason, which I still haven't been able to work out. But
maybe Gloucestershire just has a better survival rate.
Yeah. Well, probably not from what we're going to talk about. But we just do lots of work. Obviously, we'll touch on this a lot during the podcast. Mm-hmm. But so just trying to get the word out there about the Korean War, because there's a lot of interesting stories there. But the Gloucesters, traditionally, they always found themselves in the rear guard. So that's kind of how they set their stall out in history. So the retreat to Coruña during the start of the Peninsula campaign, they were the ones holding back the French. Battle of Indian River, they held the line there. Gaselle, so when 300,000 plus men were being evacuated from the beaches of Dunkirk, it was the Gloucesters and a few others who held the line. Everybody thinks that Hitler issued his stop order and then everyone lived happily ever after. But, you know, thousands of men died and sacrificed their freedom to do that. So,
and by that time, the Gloucesters must be thinking, why the hell us again?
Yes. Well, actually, one of the phrases that has come out of the Korean War is, why always the Gloucesters? So, yes.
So since you hinted at where we're going in that direction there, and let's start you off with our rage hook question, which is today, Matthew, what would you wish everyone would just get over?
It's almost not get over. It's almost people don't even know it exists. The Korean War is an incredibly huge part of history. It's the first one of the only hot conflicts in the Cold War, but just nobody knows it exists. It's just completely brushed over. It's crying shame. 1,100 Brits died out there. Mm-hmm. It's the bloodiest post-war conflict, and nobody seems to know of its existence.
Yeah, I remember going down to, shall I name and shame a museum?
Yes, please do.
Go to IWM North. If you're out there, IWM, you know, buck your ideas up. But really, I went around their galleries and I found that you would be forgiven for thinking as an outsider that British military history ended in 1945 and started again in 1982 with the Falklands conflict. I will forgive any military museum brushing over the Northern Ireland troubles at this stage. I will forgive that. But you've got all those small wars. And like you say, one bloody great big one, mm-hmm. kind of right in the middle of that, and nothing. No. There's just nothing out there at all.
No, so I think 4.5 million people died. That's 500,000 more than the Vietnam War, which people kind of still think's the archetypical Cold War conflict. But it really isn't. It's just been brushed over by history for, again, reasons I'm sure we'll touch upon later.
So before we get into the specifics of Gloucester and the Korean War then, and why we shouldn't be overlooking it, first of all, because there will be a lot of people out there, like you say, it's the forgotten war. You know, Burma likes to claim it's the forgotten army. This is a whole forgotten war. So could you give us the the background of the Korean War, how it starts, kind of what goes on in it, what it's about?
That is a nightmare question. Thank you very much. So basically the North and South are divided sort of on the Korean Peninsula. The North's communist. People say the South are democratic, but that's just not an accurate. I prefer to use the word westernized.
Yeah.
Because all the power in South Korea was invested in one man and his family. To say the UN and the glorious Brits were fighting for democracy in Korea just isn't accurate, I'm afraid. So that's quite a common misconception.
Yeah.
It is just anything was better than communism at that point, as far as the Western forces were concerned. So one day nobody really saw it happening, to be honest, but one day the North just swept straight down through the South, got all the way down to the last remaining kind of stronghold was the port of Busan on the southern tip.
Mm-hmm.
They were just about to be completely eradicated when the Americans under General MacArthur flooded through Busan. And it would take too long for me to describe what happened. Basically, they just pushed up and down the peninsula, back and forth, until one day they reached the Chinese border. And everyone said, oh, don't worry about the Chinese. They're nothing. They're not going to do anything about it with the Americans.
Who's going to worry about what Chairman Mao thinks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's going to worry about those millions and millions of Chinese? So a few days later, several million Chinese came flooding across the border, pushed UN forces all the way back down. And then it just continued going back and forth until eventually they reached a stalemate on the 43rd parallel, which is where the border remains today. I think quite famously, they've only signed an armistice, not a peace deal. So they're still officially at war.
Yeah, technically that war is still ongoing.
I went there last April and it's very eerie. So I started in the southern tip in Busan to go and pay my respects to the fallen soldiers there and worked our way up. But the further you get north, just the more and more militarized it becomes. And this theoretically is a country that's more advanced than we are technologically and, well, dare I say, monetarily as well, sadly. Mm. But the further north you get, it's just unbelievably militarized. You just wouldn't expect it in a, again, westernized kind of countries. The border region is scary. You've got huge, huge self-propelled artillery pieces, huge bunkers, armed guards every about 10 foot. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, because I imagine that they're constantly on a footing for the next time they're going to get invaded, because nobody saw it coming last time.
No.
Who's going to see it coming this time?
No, but I mean, oddly for nowadays, nobody really knows what's going on in North Korea, but one would assume that the country's in such a mess that they couldn't really put up any kind of good enough forces against the Western-backed South Koreans to make a difference this time.
One hopes. So but then again, the Americans thought that in Vietnam, didn't they?
Yeah, but the South Koreans had no tanks, they had no planes. It was just a few infantry troops, which is a very, very different story now.
So then, what specific stories or experiences of soldiers in the Korean War deserve more attention than they're currently getting? We should be paying attention to the war, but that war will be a web of intricate stories that are in there. And what stands out for you?
Well, I'm going to shamelessly plug the Closters.
A shameless plug is the best kind.
Yes, I mean, so there was a battle on the, what was the border at the time, on the Battle of Imjin, called the Battle of Imjin River. Funnily enough, it was on the Imjin River, just outside the modern town of Paju. So not to besmirch our good American friends, but the Gloucesters spotted some Chinese on the other side of the river, reported this in. The Americans flew into action, literally flying their planes, got all their spies involved. We can assure you there's no Chinese troops within 20 miles of the border. 24 hours later, hundreds of thousands of men again come flooding across the border. Everyone else had to pull back to another line, but the Gloucesters held their line, a place called eventually Gloucester Hill, funnily enough.
Yeah.
It was protecting the road to Seoul, which is the capital of South Korea. That was only 40 kilometers away. So the Gloucesters made their stand there, fought for 3 days and three nights, and eventually 522 of them ended up being made prisoner of war. Only a small, out of the entire regiment, only a small handful ever made it back to lines.
So when you're talking about regiment size, I mean, how big are we talking?
So let's, for the sake of it, say around 650 at this point.
Okay.
Because we're actually talking about this brigade size now, because they're brigaded in the 29th Brigade. So they're with the Royal Ulster Rifles, Northumberland Fusiliers. Then you have your artillery attachments and things. But as far as the Gloucesters were concerned, around that number. So yeah, huge amount died. And then 522 went into being captives in North Korea, which I just don't think that is just not something people are aware of.
Yeah.
You know, these men were frog marched with no food, no water, through terrible conditions. And then they were tortured, beaten, just unbelievable scenes to think that a Brit was involved in that. But, you know, even to me, it seems like a lifetime ago, but these people are still around and these are the experiences that they had.
Yeah. And how, you know, you've hinted a bit of their treatment that they get. How long were they prisoners of war for? How long did it take to get them back?
So just under 4 years it took until the armistice was signed. And then eventually they started filtering back over.
Eventually.
Yes. People don't hurry these things for some reason.
No, there's a lot of paperwork with prisoners of war, I imagine.
But I mean, to be fair to the North Koreans, can I say that?
Your age, you go right ahead.
Yes. I mean, conditions did improve, but that was almost because I've been thinking recently, the British character, you think it's the stiff, you know, stiff upper lip. You know, but really, I'm starting to think it's actually belligerence. And I mean that in a positive way. So when the Glossers got to the camp, 10 hours a day, they underwent really horrible, extreme psychological reevaluation. So communist re-education, 10 hours a day. And they would just sit there in the yard, just laughing, making snide jokes, throwing things at the lecturers. And every time they get beaten, but it was just in their character, they just had to do it. And then by Christmas, they were getting 4 hours a week. And then by Easter the next year, they'd just completely given up.
Yes, because you can't change a Gloucesterman's mind.
I think it's a British thing. You just sit there and think, no, I'm not going, not.
I'm not playing ball there.
No, I mean, they weren't there for political reasons. I don't think the soldier ever goes to war for political reasons. Mm-hmm. For the majority of the time, you know, you're fighting for the man next to you, basically.
Yeah.
You're not there trying to eradicate communism, I'm not sure. They didn't even know where Korea was, and that's not a besmirching. They all turned up in their tropical gear, so, and it was about minus 40 at one point.
Yeah, because you do expect that if you're going to sort of like Asia, it's going to be hot. Yeah.
Well, no, I just think nowadays, if somebody's listening, they don't know where Korea is, you just Google it, and in 30 seconds, you're educated mildly on the matter. But, you know, back then, you're going to Korea, oh, it's abroad, let's grab our shorts and T-shirt and sun cream, but that just wasn't the case.
Yeah, because I understand their climate. It was actually quite brutal.
But I mean, Colonel Khan, who was the commanding officer of the regiment, I mean, he was singled out for particularly abusive treatment. So I always forget what the film is where they try and warp soldiers' minds with drugs and then send them back to be spies.
Oh, is that the Manchurian?
Yeah, it's the Manchurian. Yes. So that actually...
A fine performance of Angela Lansbury, I think. Yeah.
But that literally happened to him. They put him in isolation for 4 years and just turned his brain into a sponge. And, yeah, just tortured him repeatedly, beat him, starved him, and, yeah, he just came back. He eventually won the Victoria Cross, which I would suggest was most deserving accolade.
And he wins the Victoria Cross for withstanding that treatment, because as I understand it, one of the conditions for the Victoria Cross is that it's under fire.
I mean, yeah, so the Victoria Cross looks as though it's quite rigid, but if you especially look into the earlier ones, you get them for your performance across a campaign. So, you know, so-and-so did 1, 2, 3, and 4 things. So I think it was his performance in leading the regiment at the Battle of Imjin River, but I'm sure also leading the regiment in prisoner of war was something he was...
Yeah, that can be that dividing line between a DSO and a VC, yes. Can't it? Yeah. We're talking about Imjin then, and you've had your shameless plug for the Gloucesters there now, Matthew.
Thank you very much.
They're not the only regiment at Imjin, are they?
I know. So this is my rage part, actually. So we bend over backwards to make everyone educated that the Gloucesters weren't the only ones there. I've already mentioned the Royal Ulster Rifles, 170 battery from the Royal Artillery, and the South Koreans were on the left flank, Northumberland Fusiliers on the right flank. A group of maniacal Belgian mercenaries actually positioned themselves on the far side of the river. So they're the only ones who got onto the far bank. So they're in 29th Infantry Brigade. Brigadier Tom Brodie was in charge of the brigade, and he coined the term that some people would be familiar with, the Glorious Gloucesters. Now, this was picked up by the New York Times, front page article, massive propaganda piece, got picked up by press all over the world. And, you know, that the Glorious Gloucesters solo stands on Gloucester Hill became a huge thing. But we bend over backwards to try and make this not the case. So I think I'm very, very honoured to hold this role. I'm the keeper of the stories of the Gloucestershire Regiment, so the most decorated regiment, infantry regiment in history. So when I first got the job, one of the first things I was told to do was to go to a soiree at the South Korean ambassador's residence in London for the Korean War.
First day, yeah?
Yeah, so I went straight down to M&S, got my off-the-peg tuxedo and a pair of pre-shined shoes, and went down there. And like when I walked in, people already knew who I was, and I was like, oh, I'm a really big deal now. People like, it's like a Wild West bar, people like whispering, oh my God, that's the guy from the Gloucesters. And things like that. And, but by the time I left there, I was crawling out on my hands and knees, fighting back the tears, because there's about 25 Korean War veterans, and every single one of them made it their business to pull me to one side and say, the difference between my lot and your lot is my lot just didn't get captured. And they're still so bitter about it. And no one does more to educate people about who was involved in this battle and the war at large than we do. But because, you know, I think it's one of the oddities of history. Now, this article was written 35 years before I was even a twinkle in the milkman's eye, and yet I'm still being haunted by it to this day.
So let's get their message out there then. Can you give us some examples of actions that the other regiments have undertaken during Imjin as well?
Well, let's not go that far. So the reason it all fell apart really was because throughout world history, that's one of the great battlegrounds, actually. Think of like Belgium as the dance floor of Europe for armies. But that's some of the world's biggest battles have taken place on the Imjin River at that exact crossing point. Mm-hmm. So we don't know this, but people in Asia, they're fully aware. So they know that there's a secret underwater land bridge underneath the river. So they use that as a crossing point. And everyone else is just guarding the visible crossing points. So they just came straight between the Gloucesters and the Northumberland Fusiliers, and then that was it then. I mean, when the Gloucesters were cut off, it wasn't just British forces. Filipinos in their extremely light tanks tried to get through and got cut off. The Hussars tried to reach the Gloucesters. The American Air Force did a huge amount to hold people back. The South Korean, or Republic of Korean forces, I should probably call them, on the left flank, they held the line for over a day. So, you know, people definitely did their part, but the Gloucesters were the ones who got cut off, and so they're the ones who the story gets told about.
I suppose the Gloucesters have the romantic last stand that is going to make the front page of the New York Times. Yeah.
Yes, but if you speak to the veterans, they would have been happy not to be making that heroic last stand and being tortured in North Korea for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, I would go out on a limb and say no Gloucester veteran who served in Korea has ever gone out perpetuating the myth that they were the only regiment there. But unfortunately, this New York Times article has just done us dirty, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and once that spark's lit, it's very hard to get that genie back in the lamp, isn't it?
Yeah, and I have no military background. I'm purely academic historian, if you will. So if I'm being pulled aside by war heroes who fought in the Korean War, I have no comeback. It's not my place to put them straight, so I just have to sit there and take it. So eventually I managed to crawl into the nearest watering hole and ease my pain.
So in your opinion then, what factors have led to the Korean War being undervalued, underrepresented, you know, and missing its place in this broader narrative of military history, particularly British and UN Western military history that we have?
So there's only really one answer to this. So some of the most hardcore Gloucesters, if you will, are from the Forest. So from the New Forest, they're all miners. They're all, if you're going to war, they're who you want next to you. However, if you're not at war, they're an absolute nightmare to have in the army. But so one of the gentlemen, a great guy called Roy Mills, used to box the regiment. He was there and, you know, he fought in A Company, so he played a huge job in trying to hold back the Chinese and the North Koreans. Eventually, he got captured, got badly injured, got tortured for 4 years, and then eventually came home. He went back to his home in Cinderford, which is in the Forest. He was walking down the high street, and he bumped into one of his oldest best friends who he hadn't seen for 5 years. And the friend said, "Where have you been?" And Roy said, "Oh, I've, been over in Korea." And his friend said, "You never guess who Mary Jane's sleeping with." It's war weariness.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, a lot of people could still remember the First World War. Most people have been through the Second World War. People just didn't want to know about it anymore.
Yeah.
It's so far away, it wasn't affecting you.
I suppose if you've been through the Second World War and so forth, and then we're still in the National Service era. So, you know, you think everything's calmed down, but suddenly you're in the British Army occupying the Rhine in 2 years, or you're out in Malaya, or, you know, going around Borneo and then Korea kicks. I suppose, yeah, when you look at it like that, it is just, it's just one more war, yeah, isn't it?
And, you know, again, as I say, bloodiest post-war conflict, but compared to the horrors of the Second World War, they're not comparable at all. So, you know, again, if you'd just been through the Second World War, Korea would seem like quite a small conflict. You know, we have the passage of time to reflect on it as the horrific thing that it was. But yeah, it was just purely war weariness. I just truly believe people had had enough, didn't want to hear about it. It's, you know, during Britain was still in rationing at this point.
Yeah.
They're still feeling the effects of the Second World War. So they didn't want to be discussing what's going on in a place they've never heard of before.
That they don't care if it's communist or not.
Yeah, and fighting a political war, which probably, again, couldn't really care less about that either, to be brutally honest. So, yeah, I mean, that is what I would put it down to. It's not, you know, again, the horrible kind of adage that history is written by the victors and this was, for all intents and purposes, a draw. So maybe people didn't make such a big effort. But
yeah, we'll write all the books about it when it's over, officially over.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so do you see any parallels between the Korean War and other conflicts that received more attention, Vietnam descending steadily into the room?
Well, I thought this is an excellent question that gives me so much scope to discuss, but actually my answer is probably no. I don't see any comparison. So, yeah, I think Vietnam, same ideology, North versus South.
Yeah, Malaya.
Malaya, communism, but the history of the two conflicts are very different. So The Koreans still have a massive hangover about Japanese occupation because that was going on way, way before the Second World War. And by comparison, I know you're probably not allowed to say this now, but the French occupation of Vietnam was probably a lot easier and lighter, still not great, but a lot easier than the Japanese occupation of Korea. So kind of the backdrop of that is very different. And obviously, again, I would suggest the outcomes very different as well.
I would suggest as well with Malaya and with Vietnam, you've got a very widely known kind of guerrilla element.
Yes.
Whereas I understand Korea to be almost a conventional war.
Yes. So the first Gloucester casualties were from North Korean guerrillas, and they did, when the US got involved, they did return to guerrilla tactics. But once the Chinese came flooding over, it was very much back to a conventional warfare again.
Yeah.
And then I think, this pains me because I don't agree with it, but I see it in the press all the time, and I did.
You can rage about it then, can't you?
Yeah, well, I know, because I'm going to really embarrass myself. I read an excellent article in Foreign Policy magazine the other day.
Oh, that's a page turner and a half, isn't it?
Really embarrassing. I was going to say other foreign policy magazines are available, but maybe they're not. It seems quite niche. But so comparing the Korean War seems to be the closest thing to resembling the Ukraine War. So, so it's, you know, kind of the realigning of power, kind of realigning of geopolitical power, as in what I mean by that is the USSR sticking their kind of elbows out and now the Chinese are doing the same. You've kind of got the top two powers in the world kind of backing both sides. So Korea's obviously the USSR and the US. Mm-hmm. Ukraine, it's now Moscow and Washington. So there are some similarities, but I've just mentioned that one because I see it in the press a lot, and it kind of pushes the NATO allies closer together. It's pushed Beijing and Moscow closer together. But I really do think Foreign Policy magazine was scraped in the barrel on that one. Sorry, Foreign Policy magazine. But I've seen it in the press a lot, you know, in the mainstream press as well. But I think the reason perhaps, say, it is very difficult to compare any wars. I know people love to do it. And I'm actually shamelessly also writing a book comparing the three kind of main marches on Moscow. So Swedish, Napoleonic and German. And, you know, you can make those parallels, but sometimes you can be quite guilty of looking for similarities when they're not actually there.
So how, going back to your museum then, how are you incorporating experiences of Korean War veterans into both, you know, still finding out and learning about that conflict as well as interpreting that conflict out into wider public history?
So I think this is still quite, I'm not going to say how old I am. I would consider myself young. I'm not that young, unfortunately, but I'm of the younger generation for what you would consider to be a historian. So I think my generation, we've really come in. People don't want to read the story of the white, old, upper middle class man and his gun and his medal anymore. They really want those personal stories. Mm-hmm. So what we've been keen to do is interview all the remaining veterans and really get their stories. So again, this isn't a shameless plug, but I've just had a book published called Final Roll Call, which is available in the museum shop and online. And I went and interviewed all the remaining veterans, and none of them are officers. So traditionally, you'll see the regimental histories, especially about the battles, are written by the officers. And they, although they're accurate, they're very polished to try and protect the image of the regiment. So, for example, this is a very potted history of the Battle of Indian River, but tried to stop them at the Indian River, ran out of ammunition, fell back to a place called Castle Hill, stopped them there, ran out of ammunition, and then pulled back to Gloucester Hill, where the rest is history. So I almost plugged another rival podcast there, didn't I?
Not as good as mine.
But it was on Castle Hill, if you read the regimental history, it's like, right, come on, boys, we've run out of ammunition, let's... Everyone follow me and we'll go back to the hill over there. And it's a nice leisurely regimental march back to Gloucester Hill. But you speak to the guys and these are far better stories, in my opinion, because they were scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have, many of them did die trying to get from Castle Hill to Gloucester. It wasn't this big regimental parade. It was every man for himself. Some people were throwing themselves over cliffs to get away and falling down hills and breaking their ankles and things so they couldn't get away. I think that's far more important part of the story, and it's a bit more realistic as well. You know, I don't think we need this polished kind of history of war now. I think kind of seeing what the working man experienced. And then also, I actually stole this idea from someone else, but I think in the 90s, somebody suddenly realized, oh God, all the First World War veterans, there's hardly any left, and we haven't recorded their stories. So the Glossers produced this excellent, it's kind of like a pamphlet, but it's called The Old and the Bold. And then I read it and it was so good. And it wasn't like, oh, the Germans came over the top and C Company went around the left and then A Company did this. It was like one day the latrines flooded and Corporal so-and-so fell over face first into it. And his nickname was something that I probably can't mention on this podcast for the rest of the time. You know, just those little anecdotes.
That's stuff you'll never get in a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one guy, I'll not name him, but he was a veteran of the malaria emergency.
Yeah.
And he showed me a photo album, and in the middle of the photo album, so you've got the usual, they're all playing football in the camp and things like that. And then there was like two dead Chinese terrorists in the middle of it with numbers on the back. So what's the numbers? And he said, oh, that's the money you got. Oh. And he said, the British Army's not mercenaries, so we couldn't take the money. Yeah. We had to go and give it to the Dayak scouts, but the Dayak scouts didn't want it. So we gave them the guns. And we got him to sign the receipt and we kept the money. And he said he came over from National Service and bought his first house with blood money from the malaria emergency. Don't you never get that in a book?
No, so we got some great ones. So they sailed out to the Korea on the Empire Windrush, which obviously goes on to play an incredibly important part in this nation's history. But on the way through the Suez Canal, the Royal Artillery guys who were attached to the Gloucesters, they had all their weapons on the back of the ship. And they took all the covers off to clean them. And the Egyptians thought they had been invaded. And when they finally docked at Korea, they got pulled straight into the embassy and they got absolute bollocking. Because the Egyptians thought they'd been invaded, called it a huge diplomatic incident. And then just a little bit. So when they were headed north, the train broke in half and it took about a day and a half for them to realize. So half the regiment were left in Busan and the other half were north of Seoul. Just little things like that. You know, once these guys are gone, that's it. Those stories are gone with them. So you need to kind of record their personal stories.
Well, thank you very much for that, Matthew. Do you feel better having got it off your chest?
A little. I'll keep raging though. Don't you worry. I'll keep the rage going.
Well, thank you very much. And if you would like to know more about the Gloucesters, the other regiments at Injin and the Korean War, then you can and should visit the Soldiers of Gloucestershire Museum at Gloucester Docks. You can find their website at soldiersofgloss.com and you can follow them on Twitter at Soldiers of Gloss. And once again, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We have more coming for you over the course of the festival. If you've not managed to make it this year, then the festival returns in autumn. And those dates are 14th of September to 22nd of September 2024. You can sign up for the festival mailing list at gloucesterhistoryfestival.co.uk and follow them on Twitter at GloucesHistFest. And if you're loving this, then please follow us on Twitter at HistoryRage. Please support us on Patreon. In return for your cherished £5 per month, we will give you early episodes, entry into all of our prize draws, the invite to put questions to future guests, and of course, the coveted History Rage mug. And you can subscribe at patreon.com/History Rage. But until our next rage, from everyone here, stay angry.